Okay, we're back on the record. The next matter up is a rehearing on 2013-2014, number 89. And motion filed by Mr. I'm not sure which one you are. So.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. I'm Stephen Lenhart, attorney for Petitioner Kemper. Let me first address the single subject issues with this measure. It's a proposed constitutional amendment that contains multiple subjects, at least three, that would create a common property right in the environment as a public trust. It would create a constitutional public trust doctrine, and it would enact local control, controlling over over less restrictive state laws similar to Initiative 75 and other measures that the board has heard this year. That clearly is a separate subject. These themes are being pursued separately by other proponents and other current proposed initiatives. Initiative 103 that is filed for title setting later today is a measure to create environmental rights as a public trust. Some of the board members may remember Mr. Doe as a proponent of that measure and also was a sponsor of initiatives 3 and 45 2 years ago talking about a public trust specifically in water resources. Then we've got the totally separate theme of local control that was proposed quite broadly in initiative 75 that the board has heard in the last two meetings and is similarly being proposed in other current measures, including 82 that the board heard this morning and some others that are on the agenda for this afternoon. These themes are separate and distinct subjects. They lack even a single overarching theme. Somewhat like Initiative 103's broad variations on this recurring theme of a public trust, Initiative 89 would create a right to the environment. Would I designate that right as common property of all Coloradans and would obligate the state to act as trustee of this resource. There was some discussion at the meeting 2 weeks ago about Initiative 75's vague authorization for locally established rights of nature, but Initiative 89 truly does establish a new fundamental right for environmental conservation. Like Initiative 75 and 82 and the other local control measures, Initiative 89 also would empower every city, town, and county in the state to enact more restrictive laws that control over conflicting state laws. This initiative goes beyond those other measures by making every local government a trustee of the environment. Under the public trust, as it's always been understood before, the state is the trustee. But this designates every local government as the trustee as well. So we've got a public trust with multiple trustees, with overlapping jurisdictions, conflicting authorities to act unilaterally. While the at the same time changing the current. Fundamentally changing the current constitutional relationship between the state and local governments. These subjects are incongruous. There's no necessary or proper connection between them. Creating a statewide environmental right and a public trust are separate issues with a separate constituency for each. That's why we've seen them pursued as separate measures. Particularly the notions of a public trust and an environmental right have a separate constituency than expanding local control free of the shackles of state preemption. I'm sure you're aware that one of the main purposes of the single subject requirement is as a prohibition on what's known as log rolling, joining together multiple subjects into a single initiative in the hope of attracting support from various factions which may have different or even conflicting interests, as the court said in the Public Rights and Waters 2 case in 1995. I believe that's exactly what is being done here, is combining these different subjects that appeal to differing and sometimes conflicting interests and trying to paste those together into a single measure. So this initiative violates the single subject requirement.
Are the proponents present? Oh, okay.
Oh, there you
are.
I'm going to introduce them.
Okay, great. Why don't you come on up?
I don't know. Madam Chair, we have other objectors. Do you want to hear from them as well and then?
Yeah,
me,
why don't
not?
We hear from all the objectors?
Okay.
And that concludes my remarks on single subject. I'd be happy to answer questions. And if the board determines to look at modifying the title, I'll have a few words to say on that subject as well.
Any questions? No. All right. Mr. Kaufman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Richard Kaufman, and I'm here representing objectors. I'd like to endorse what Mr. Lehnart said. I think there are, as I've stated in my papers, I think there's three distinct subjects: public trust, common property, preemption. I also think, and I'll get to this specifically in a minute, I think this preempts federal law too, even though it doesn't state so specifically, but that's a separate subject that is not related to this measure. And if I can, as Mr. Lehnart, I believe, has said, I think today and in his papers, and I think I've said my papers, public trust doctrine has been the navigable waters in a state and the land underneath it. This goes far beyond that, and I want to. It says including pure water, clean air, and let me get the other term here just a second. It says clean air, pure water, and natural and scenic values. Now it uses the word including in the measure, and it uses the word including in the title that's been set. If you look at the legal definition of including, that means that it's only a partial list of what's included. That means there's other unspoken items. We don't know what those are, but there are other subjects that would be included in this. Those are not in the measure, and they're not in the title. And some of this, what I'm saying, bleeds over, obviously, into the 106 issues, too. And I hope, if it's okay, I can just include that rather than coming back up and going back and forth. Thank you. So I think it includes subjects that aren't even stated yet. I think there's also the second subject of preemption. And under preemption, it preempts federal law, even though it doesn't say that. Let me explain exactly what I mean. Under the Federal Clean Air Act, the states are allowed to implement that act. And the state of Colorado and every other state, every 5 years, has to adopt a state implementation plan for regional haze. In fact, that was just adopted. The way that's adopted is the Colorado Department of Public Health implements and promulgates a rule on regional haze. That rule then is adopted by the legislature. The governor has to sign it. Then it goes to EPA, and EPA, in its turn, puts it in the Federal Register, and then it is adopted as the SIP for Colorado. Under this proposal, local governments could change that because they would have the power to say what the regional haze standard should be for their county or their city. So this is trying to preempt federal law also, which we don't get into interpretation here, but that's a subject that's not included in the title or in the proposal itself. If I may go on, I think there's another issue. As I mentioned, the inclusive issue, that there's other issues that are unstated that need to be fleshed out before this goes onto the ballot. That pure water, clean air, and the scenic values are only a subset of whatever the total list is, and we don't know what it is at this point in time. It could be social and cultural environment, knowledge environment, the built environment, which is buildings, et cetera. And I think there is also hidden in this proposal, and under, I think, the Gonzalez Este case, these kinds of issues can't be put on the ballot either. And when I say hidden, I don't mean anything nefarious, but this is what this proposal would do. Now, let me give you by way of example the noise abatement statute, which is 2512-103 under the Colorado Revised Statute. Under that statute, the PUC is given the authority, the exclusive authority, to establish any kind of noise standards for power plants, power lines, et cetera, specifically eliminating counties and cities from that because of the we need a standardized grid and standardized service. This would, assuming noise would be part of the environment, I don't see why it wouldn't be part of the environment, this proposal would allow counties and cities to change that, to amend that, and have their own power line standard, their own noise abatement standard for that. That's not stated in the measure, and it's not stated in the title. But it's those kinds of things that are, I think, make this confusing and misleading. I would also like to point out that there is, by way of example, again, another statute that is on the books right now, and it's the Recreation Land Preservation Statute. And it allows the counties right now to be one of the, or the cities, or police departments, whatever, to enforce this statute. It also has, if there's a violation of this statute by a citizen, it sets it up as a misdemeanor with a fine of $500. Now, this proposal doesn't say anything about this, but what if local city and counties wanted to criminalize that and make some kind of violation of felony? They could do it. In other words, there's another subject here, criminal law, that's not stated either. And this proposal would allow local city and counties to establish their own criminal code for these kinds of violations, and that's not in this proposal. And I think,
but a local can't establish a felony. I mean, local governments can only legislate in their municipalities, right?
Sure, I agree with that.
So you can only have a municipal offense, and that has a limitation by.
But I'm not sure what this proposal would be limited any longer. I agree that under present law it is limited.
Right.
But that is one of the subjects that is included here but not stated.
Okay.
I'd be glad to answer any other questions you may have.
No questions?
Yeah.
All right.
Madam Chair, Edward Ramey, on behalf of the proponents and the designated representatives, Mr. Diamond and Ms. Leahy are both present and have signed in today. With regard to the single subject issue, let me sort of pick up, I think, a little bit where Mr. Domenico and I left off in a discussion 2 weeks ago. I've struggled for years with the issues of necessary or proper connection, you know, what that term means, and disconnected and incongruous, and when you reach that level. I would state, if to put it in my own words, the purpose of this measure is requiring state and local governments to protect Colorado's environment as trustees for the people. Then there are two implementation or definitional pieces that follow that measure. One is it declares what the right being protected is, and secondly, it addresses questions of overlapping regulations so that the strictest controls. Those are, I would submit to the board, clearly connected. They're not incongruous. There's nothing, I'll get a little more to buried in the folds, buried in the coils, whatever that language was from a case many years ago, but there's nothing like that. That's really all this measure does. And one way that I've tried to look at it in the past is, does it commonsensically, if that's a word, would it make sense to run a measure that creates a sort of a public trust responsibility for governments and then stop there? And then say, well, we're going to run another measure that defines what the right being protected by that first measure is. And then we're going to run a third measure that talks about how we're going to allocate, determine whether a local government's regulation how that interplays with the state regulation. And I submit to the board that when you start asking questions like that, and it seems nonsensical to have follow-up measures, that's when I would suggest we're dealing with a single subject, and I think we are here. Two cases back from a little time ago, both with Mr. Lenhart actually was involved in, as I understand, as was Mr. Kneiser. I think they're the only living people in the room who were involved in them. One was Waters 2, which Mr. Lenhart spoke about. Another one was the one of the John Fielder initiatives, the Citizen Management of Growth initiatives. And they came out precisely opposite, and they sort of define, I think, the single subject area that we're dealing with. In Waters 2, which has sort of become the symbol of how you can't take a word like water and do everything conceivable that has any connection with water in a single initiative. And by the way, the site for that is 898 P. Second 1076. It was 1995 Supreme Court opinion. What was happening there is a public trust doctrine indeed was created for concerning water in particular in that case. And then, as Mr. Domenico and I were speaking at the talking about at the initial hearing, the measure went on to do something else. It started allocating voting rights and various other powers of water conservancy districts, which interestingly the court held, and I had forgotten this, but looking back at the opinion, water conservancy districts were left with virtually no power at all to do anything under the public trust doctrine that the rest of the initiative created. So you did have incongruous and unrelated subjects there. Quite distinct was the other case in which Mr. Lenhart and Mr. Kneiser were involved in, which came out the other way. Mr. Lenhart, I think, was always the petitioner at the Supreme Court and Mr. Kneiser defending the board. It was dealing with management of growth and what was kind of folded into that measure. I tried to tick off, just reading the Supreme Court opinion, what sort of topics were in there. Everything from creating all kinds of industry-specific exceptions to what development means, reducing, in that case, local government authority, requiring overlapping governmental jurisdiction for various growth-related activities that would take place, created a referendum right, impaired property rights purportedly interfered with the right of people to petition the government. I don't know how it did that, but it was alleged to have done that, created a 10-year moratorium on taxing, borrowing, and spending whenever water, sewer, and road service developments came into play, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the Supreme Court decided in that case it's a very broad topic, but it's a single topic, and there's a congruity between the measures. That's, I would submit to the board, is where we are here. And, again, coming back to the point that it wouldn't make sense to take any of the topics that have been identified by either of the protesters and say, well, we'll save that up and run that as a separate subject all by itself in another initiative, when what it has to deal with is either interpretation or implementation of this particular initiative. That creates the congruity. That creates the connection. I was interested, very interested, reading Mr. Lenhart. I don't mean to personalize them, but they're here, so I'll do that. Mr. Lenhart's memorandum, which I thought was very well done, and should go to the Blue Book drafters, seriously. And also listening to Mr. Kaufman and his explanations, there are a lot of arguments made there, frankly. I don't even know how to begin to answer. I would take exception with a number of them. We could have long debates this afternoon, and I could start with the purported effect on conservation easements, for example, that Mr. Lenhart speaks about. But whether we agree or disagree, I don't know. I mean, I can tell you one thing. There is no effort in this measure to preempt federal law. Now, there may turn out to be an impact upon and conflict with federal law or not. I don't know. That's for downstream, for a court to determine, but there is no effort, and there's nothing coiled up, folded up in the coils, whatever that phrase is, as an attempt to preempt federal law through a state initiative process. Many of these other things, again, I mean, in all candor, they may be right, and we may haven't even thought of them, and there may be an interpretive issue downstream that a court's going to have to wrestle with, and legislative history hopefully will inform the wrestling with that decision that a court will have to do. But reading, trying to deal in determining whether there's a single subject here or not with all the possible impacts that this might be argued by somebody to possibly have downstream, again, I don't think impacts a single subject analysis. So I will stop with that on that point unless the board has any questions.
No? All right. Thank you. Any discussion?
I guess I'll start and comment. I think I am inclined to find, as we did last time, that this constitutes a single subject, and all the details notwithstanding, the reason I'm leaning in that direction is that there may be tremendous effects were this to be adopted, but it seems like those effects result from what local governments and the state might do down the road, not from the as much from the execution of the initiative itself. And it seems like I notice, even though in the motion for rehearing on behalf of Mr. Kemper, that even though it lists as a second subject establishing the environment as common property of all the citizens of Colorado, above it does say the public trust in the environment as the common property. So I think at least those two things are really pretty much the same thing, that the first subsection of the initiative itself is largely a legislative declaration, and that however sort of vast the effects of this initiative may be, what it on its face is actually doing is simply creating a public trust and mechanism and a mechanism for enforcement of that in order to conserve the environment as a right of the people. So for that reason, I'm inclined to find a single subject.
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree. It certainly is a broad subject, but I don't read the cases saying you can't have a broad subject. The problematic ones are when you need a broad subject because you're picking and choosing a bunch of sort of different things and have to pick a broad subject to cover all of them. Here, I think they're just trying to do something that's itself broad and a sort of massive change. And the common property and the trust seem clearly to me, if not necessarily identical, to be very clearly related to each other. The question about the preemption, I think, is maybe a little bit closer, that you certainly could imagine having a measure that did the rest of it without upending the relationship between state and local governments. But I also don't think it's incongruous. I don't think it's sort of the sort of thing that's really hidden up in there in the way that's been held to be problematic in the past. So I think I agree.
Want to make a motion?
Sure. I would move that we deny the motion to rehearing to the extent that we find that 2013-14 number 89 has a single subject.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. I'm going to move on to the title. So let me invite the petitioners for the rehearing back up again to discuss. The adopted title.
Yes, the first significant issue that we have with the adopted title is the concerning phrase used to in the attempt to identify the subject as the creation of a public trust over Colorado's environment. First, that phrase is too narrow in that it gives no indication of empowering local governments to preempt state law, which is one of the major features of the initiative, and it's not anywhere present in any notion of a public trust. Also, I believe it's a catchphrase. Public trust, to the extent there may be any shared understanding of what it means, would be the traditional public trust doctrine under common law and under constitutions of some other states, but certainly not Colorado's at this time. The traditional public trust doctrine is a restraint on the sovereign's conveyances of tide lands and navigable waters in order to protect public use for commercial navigation and fishing. As explained in a series of decisions such as the Illinois Central case in the U.S. Supreme Court over 100 years ago and summarized in Justice Hobbs' dissent on Initiative 3 2 years ago. That's what the public trust doctrine has meant in the common legal understanding under English common law and the laws of some of the United States, though not this one. Public trust is used in this initiative to mean something completely different than that. And I believe to the extent it's used to mean something different than the traditional meaning, it can only be a catchphrase. The other issues that we have with the title are that two of the key features of the initiative have been improperly omitted from the title and need to be disclosed to the voters. Number one, these are both issues under Section 1 of the measure. It would create a fundamental right to conservation of the environment. A fundamental right obviously has very significant legal meaning and needs to be disclosed. And number two, it would require preservation of the environment as a property right for future generations. That concept is not present or disclosed in the title. Unless there are any questions, that
any questions? No.
Concluding your comments. Thank you.
Go. You don't have anything on the title. Okay. All right. Go ahead, Mr. Ramey.
Madam Chair, I just very briefly. I think first off, I would question whether the term public trust is a catchphrase. I don't think that tends to influence the vote one way or the other. What that means is basically that the people are entrusting protection of the identified rights to the governmental units, and that's basically all that means. So it is a public trust in that regard. on the two other matters, declaring the right to be fundamental, we could put that in the title. I don't think that's at all essential or necessary to have in the title, but that just, I think, unnecessarily lengthens it. And secondly, the preservation of the environment for future generations, I would suggest that's implicit when you're preserving the environment for the people, unless you say otherwise. And there's some life to this measure, it will necessarily involve future generations. So I think the title is fine as presently written.
Well, I guess I'll start by saying that I was at least willing to consider making some adjustments to the use of the public trust language in the single subject statement. Obviously, it depends a little bit on how you define or what you consider to be a public trust. To me, Mr. Leonard is right, though, that really this is in some ways about more than what's often thought of as a public trust, and in some ways about maybe potentially less. And what it's really about, I think, and my suggestion was going to be to alter the single subject to something about concerning government control over Colorado's environment. And then the way it addresses that question of government control is creating this idea of a public trust, common property, et cetera, et cetera. that maybe we sort of got ahead of ourselves in deciding that all of it was aimed at a public trust, when really maybe the public trust is part of a number of things that it does. So that was going to be my suggestion. The idea of government control would, to me, capture, I think, all the material aspects of it.
I guess the only question I would ask is whether public control better captures the meaning, since it gets into the fundamental right, and government is really the mechanism. And, you know, it's sort of the same, because government, in theory, at least only acts on, you know, that's how the public acts, is through government.
Right. And so my little notes had definitively getting rid of the creation of a and changing trust to control, and then a question mark about whether to change public to government, recognizing kind of that same question. I do think that the reason I was leaning towards government was partly to capture this idea of the switch from state to local government preeminence, and that this both gives government, the public in general, more control, more direction, but also alters the relationship among levels of government. So that was why I was leaning towards government.
Actually, let's talk about that a little. Are we really that certain that we're not making somewhat of an assumption when we're saying this shifts a lot of power to local government? I mean, I guess we think that's in effect, but local governments now do have some power. I don't know how much to do environmental regulation. What we've said here is, well, they have power to be more restrictive, but if they're less restrictive, the state law is actually going to control.
Right. I think that's true. I mean, I do think this will have significant change in the current balance of power between state and local government. I don't think that's controversial. Certainly, it's true that not in every way. Doesn't just completely turn over all regulation to the locals. I think that's a good point.
Madam Chair, Is it acceptable to intervene a little bit on this?
Tell us who you are, just for appeal purposes. It makes it a little easier.
I will do that. Ed Ramey again on behalf of the proponents. I just wanted to go to a point that I think Mr. Domenico and Mr. Gallander are batting back and forth a little bit, and that is sort of the concept of government control and government trust. And the proponents, I think, would far prefer to keep creation of a public trust in there, not in terms of utilizing some term of art that may mean something to different sets of lawyers, but rather the point of this measure isn't, I mean, government control sort of carries a concept with it that is a little different, I think, than at least what the proponents are intending here. What we're intending is that the people have a right in the environment as defined, and we are entrusting the protection of that right. Entrusting, there's so buried in the word, you know, and there is trust, to the governments at various levels. And again, it raises a question you're just about to get into. But I think the important thrust of this thing is not government control over anything. What it is a right, protection of a right, and entrusting that, the administration, the protection, the regulation, whatever word you want to use in there, of that right, to governmental units at all levels. So the creation of a public trust, I think, comes a whole lot closer to what the proponents intend and what the language of the measure does. And if we're worried about catchphrases, we'll shoulder the risk of public trust being a catchphrase. Government control, I mean, oh my God, I mean, that's almost a sky-falling catchphrase in today's environment. So I'm way more concerned about that, and it's obviously one I don't like as much as I like public trust. But so I really would advocate for sticking close to with what you have. I think it's good.
I'm just going to...
Kind of strange that public and government sort of are the same except have very different catchphrase connotations.
You know, I'm looking back at the original staff draft, which, of course, you rejected, which talked about concerning a public right to the environment. And, you know, originally in looking at this, the whole public trust thing, especially when it's not really explicitly stated in here, is a little interesting. I'm also, you know, this fact that the first subsection here, it says it's creating a fundamental right, but the way it's phrased, it literally is saying it's creating a fundamental right. I don't know that it actually is. You know, it's essentially a declaration followed by a should. And I wonder if an appropriate single subject might be something almost like, you know, just declaring a public right to conservation of Colorado's environment, which I think tracks what they're really declaring in subsection one, and then the rest is just implementation.
Go ahead.
Chair Ed Ramey, I don't think the proponents would have any objection to what Mr. Gallander just said, or an approach like that where you're sort of dealing initially with the right that's being created, and the public trust is the implementation of the protection of that right. So we would not object to that approach.
Which means I suspect that other attorneys in the audience might. No, so.
They absolutely will.
I mean, well, I don't think it goes to where they want to go, but yeah, go ahead.
Richard Coffin, I would go with Mr. Domenico's language because it is, it's setting up this right, but it's not rights in the individual citizens. It's rights that it's the government, it's handed over for government control and government implementation. So I would go with government control.
And how would your language read?
Let's see. Declaring a public right to conservation of Colorado's environment.
It's a public right and obligation, isn't it? Or
so can I? I agree with Mr. Kaufman agreeing with me about the ideal arrangement. But alternatively, what if we just shorten your suggestion, which I think Mr. Kaufman will now strenuously disagree with me, but just get rid of the public right language and just say concerning conservation of Colorado's environment. That's very general. Obviously, much more general than anything else we've talked about, but maybe we need to get a little more general in order to deal with the broad and general effects of this.
I'm a little nervous about that one because I think what it's because I don't think you'll find anyone who's going to say, "Well, we'll object to the environment being conserved," but there'd be plenty of people who would really like that phrase and would say public trust, common what's all this stuff. So that's my concern.
Like Mr. Kaufman, I preferred Mr. Domenico's earlier language. I also have a particular concern with the use of the word conservation, which could be a catchphrase in a way that means a lot of different things to different people. Conservation here appears only in the legislative declaration, and protection is the word that appears throughout. I think if we're going to use a verb there, that protection is a better word, but the operative provisions all deal with the roles of government, whether it be government control, which I think is the most accurate statement, or government obligations as public trustees. Perhaps an alternative phrase to consider would be concerning the roles of government over protection of Colorado's environment. And hope that's consistent with the last few remarks.
Yeah. Madam Chair, if there's a moment of silence from the board, please. Edward Rainey on behalf of the proponents. The two things. Number one, this measure is going in the Bill of Rights. So the creation of the rights, I think is where Mr. Gallander was headed a little while ago, I mean, is a preeminent thing. And just to say that it's about conservation or it's about control or it's about government or something like that, I would agree with everybody in the room. I think kind of misses a point. This is recognition of a fundamental right, which then is entrusted to various governmental entities to deal with on behalf of the people, not to control as governmental entities in their own interests, whatever that means, but specifically on behalf of the people, the trustees for the people. Secondly, the shift in or change in the powers of state, of local governments in particular, that this would entail is implementational. And to make that preeminent, that this is about local control or something of that nature, that isn't what this is. This is creating a right. I don't think creating a right, maybe, as much as recognizing a right. One could quibble about that, but it's one or the other, and then entrusting that right to the government. So I don't want to lose track of that theme, because I think that's what the language of the measure says.
Can I make one suggestion that might raise some risk for the proponents we could go with kind of our get rid of the concerning in connection therewith language and say something more like an amendment to the Colorado Constitution creating a public trust over Colorado's environment, declaring, and just go from leave the rest the same. That's one possibility. I mean, the other thing is, I'm looking at this again. Public trust, what Mr. Rainey's been saying is maybe public trust is itself kind of our own use of some phrase we've heard before that doesn't necessarily actually appear in the measure. I don't think.
It doesn't.
It says basically it's common property, which we talked about last time. Then it says you have a right to the environment, and state and local governments are trustees of this resource. I might prefer to, if we're going to rearrange things, to just get rid of the public trust language, partly for the reasons the objectors have stated about the potential term of art, if not catchphrase issues there, and just say what it does rather than put our own interpretation on it.
I think I'm definitely in favor of saying what it does as opposed to interpreting it to the extent that we can.
Okay, so one possibility is what I just suggested that we could tweak, but it would basically be no more concerning in connection therewith and just be to change the public trust language into something about stating that as trustees of the environment, state and local governments shall conserve the environment or something like that. Another possibility is back more similar, I think, to what Mr. Gallander was suggesting earlier, and actually also more similar to the original staff draft. If we want to keep the concerning language, something about concerning a public right to the Colorado's environment or the environment, and in connection therewith, basically what we have, plus some language about governments being trustees.
I'm fine with that.
Okay, so then it would be a public right to Colorado's environment, and in connection therewith, and then I think I would go after Coloradans, actually, and say, since that's sort of the order, say, well, you could just say something like specifying that the environment can includes blah, 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 and that, so all the way down to the semicolon on line 4, before the semicolon, say something like, and that state and local governments are trustees of this resource. We could do it that way, or maybe we don't even need it if it's already in that next language, what's already on line 5 about them being trustees.
On line 5, I missed a bit. We can just pull the little as trustees, I think, since we have it right above.
Yeah, we probably get rid of either what I added or that, probably.
Let's get rid of that. I think I'm pretty good with that. I can't remember. I think we talked about this last week. I think I, just for grammatical consistency, kind of wanted on line 6, or state or local laws or regulations, but I think we vetoed that last time, so I'm not obsessed with it.
Yeah, I view regulation as kind of the, if we were doing Venn diagrams, as we talked about earlier, regulation to be, to encompass everything, whereas, so if we were going to make a change, I would change it to regulations, but if not, I'm also okay with, I think this gets across the material point of the measure.
I mean, I like it. I'm not sure it makes... It's not really where the rehearing people are going, but
okay.
I think it's better.
All right, should we move it then?
Sure, Steve, you want to collapse it and then we'll read it? That's an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning a public right to Colorado's environment and in connection therewith, declaring that Colorado's environment is the common property of all Coloradans, specifying that the environment includes clean air, pure water, and natural and scenic values, and that state and local governments are trustees of this resource, requiring state and local governments to conserve the environment, and declaring that if state or local laws conflict, the more restrictive law or regulation governs.
All right. And I would move we, I guess it's technically grant the motion for rehearing to the extent we adopt the amended title just recited for proposed initiative 2013-14, number 89.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Passes. And that takes us to the next motion for rehearing, which is on proposed initiative 2013-2014, number 85. Mr. Feely.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the board. My name is Mike Feely. I'm with Brownstein Hyatt Farber Schreck, and I'm appearing on behalf of the objectors. Let me address the jurisdictional issues first.
Yeah, if we could start with single subject, I think that'd be helpful.
I will. Let me address another jurisdictional matter as well.
Oh, okay.
At the hearings on initiatives 85 through 88, counsel for the proponents was clear that the purpose of these initiatives was to further limit the development and operations of oil and gas. As was addressed a little earlier, I think in connection with initiative 82, I think by Mr. Domenico, the title board's job is not to construe the proponent's intent, but the board is required to consider the initiative's language to ensure it reaches the right decisions on a single subject and title. And the Supreme Court reminds us in the case of Kemper v. Hamilton, 172 Pacific 3rd, 871, that in examining it, we apply the rules of statutory construction and accord the language of the measure its plain meaning. Here in Initiative 85, and this is true of 86, 87, and 88 as well, but dealing specifically with 85, the language of the measure affects purpose and meaning in a way that cannot be ignored. The term oil and gas operations is specifically defined in that proposal to mean exploration for and production of Colorado's oil, gas, other gaseous and liquid hydrocarbons and carbon dioxide. And as the chair noted earlier, it's all in the definition. It's all controlled by the definition. Whatever the proponent's intent might be, they consciously chose to qualify the type of oil and gas exploration and production affected by the initiative. They did so with the use of the possessive word Colorado's. That's Colorado apostrophe S. That leaves the average voter to believe that the initiative only affects oil and gas belonging to the state of Colorado and not private or federal mineral interests. Or the voter would wonder or be unclear as to whether the initiative affects only oil and gas mineral rights belonging to the state of Colorado and not private or federal mineral interests. If I may approach, let me hand a couple of documents to the board. Let me grab one for myself. Colorado, that is the state of Colorado, owns approximately 4 million acres of mineral rights all across the state. Ownership of the surface estate and the mineral estate were granted to the state by the federal government in 1867. They're managed by the State Land Board largely for the benefit of public K-12 schools. Those minerals under those 40 million acres are Colorado's oil, gas, other gaseous, and liquid hydrocarbons and carbon dioxide. Either the board must reflect the unambiguous language in the title, or it must not set the title because the purpose of the initiative cannot be comprehended. Now, as to the single subject issues, we believe that the board cannot set title if the initiative contains multiple subjects, and that's the case with Initiative 85. The first subject is an override of the state's current rules prohibiting oil and gas wells from being within 500 feet of any building and requiring special approval within 1,000 feet of buildings with large numbers of people, such as schools, hospitals, or nursing homes. A second and separate subject contained within Initiative 85 is the authorization of homeowners to waive the prohibition, making it impossible for voters who are divided, that is, require a vote yes or no, on expanding or overriding the current prohibition, but allowing a waiver. It is not necessary for the institution of a prohibition or an overriding the current rules and regulations to allow a waiver, and a voter might very well be in favor of the prohibition within 1,500 feet and be opposed to a homeowner waiving that prohibition. They don't necessarily depend upon one another. A third subject that's separate, and this subject is perhaps most removed from the other subjects contained within Initiative 85, asks the voters to nullify the state constitutional just compensation provisions, asking voters on one hand to limit the state's power to develop its oil and gas minerals, and on the other hand to expand the state's power to take property without paying for it. Now, one could easily envision that the independence of those two provisions, that is, the prohibition for within 1,500 feet of a home and the elimination of the state's power, or the expansion, rather, of the state's power to take property without paying for it, are totally unrelated to one another. One could easily accomplish a prohibition of oil and gas within any certain limit and expect that the government would continue to pay just compensation for land that, up until the passage of this initiative, is a fundamental constitutional right. I think with those separate subjects and with the earlier problem that I think creates a jurisdictional problem for the board to set title in any sense, that there are problems with Initiative 85 and a title should not be set. I'll be happy to address any title issues once the board has an opportunity to consider these matters.
Any questions?
No. I'm sorry, if I may answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Ramey.
Madam Chair, Edward Ramey on behalf of the proponents, and since we do have a new initiative, I'll say that Mr. Diamond and Ms. Leahy are both still present in the room. With regard to the first argument, to the extent I understand it, and I apologize because it's the first I heard it and it wasn't in the written motion. At least I didn't read it in there. Perhaps it was. Trying to think of the best way to respond to this. The language of the measure itself says that all new oil and gas wells requiring a state or local permit, including those using hydraulic fracturing, must be subject to a particular setback requirement. Who happens to own the underlying mineral interests in that phrase is not addressed. Mr. Feely is correct that oil and gas operations is then defined as meaning the exploration and production of Colorado's oil, gas, and other gaseous and liquid hydrocarbons. Putting the phrases together, I would submit to the board that the clear intent of this measure, and I mean that in an interpretive way, because we do have to go with the language, but we always have interpretive language, is that these are resources within the state of Colorado, and it's immaterial who owns them. whether it be the federal government or the state of Colorado, private owners, whoever the case might be, if they require a state or local permit, then they would be subject to these setback requirements. Now, again, there may be a situation, and I frankly don't, I personally have no idea, where the setback requirement would bounce against some other federally imposed restriction, limitation, entitlement, or something. I don't know what that would be, but if it is, then that would have to be sorted out, you know, in due course, because we can't preempt federal law, and there's no suggestion in this measure that we're attempting to do that. So, again, just from reading the measure as a whole, we are not, the measure by its language does not attempt to restrict the oil and gas reserves in question to those happen to be owned by the state of Colorado. On the single subject issues, I would just say the single subject is the setback. Period, underlined, underscored, in bold type. That it's all about the setback. The takings provision, if you will, the addressing the impact of the two sections in Article 2 regarding a taking is implementational. The inclusion of hydraulic fracturing, again, only it's an oil and gas operation that's part of that, and it applies only in the context of the setback. And authorizing homeowner to waive the setback requirement is again purely implementational. And I would come back to I guess the analogy that I used in connection with number 89 a few moments ago, that would it make sense to adopt the measure, let's just say the setback, and then have to adopt another measure that says, oh, by the way, that first measure shall not be considered a taking under the Colorado Constitution. Then another measure that would say, oh, yeah, by the way, when we say oil and gas operations, we certainly meant to include hydraulic fracturing. And then another measure that would say, oh, by the way, with regard to that first measure, homeowners can waive the setback. It's all one topic. It all folds together. They all, nothing's incongruous, and they're all connected. So I would submit that there is a single subject, and that reading the measure together, I'm not sure it's even jurisdictional in nature, but the measure does not talk about affecting only oil and gas interests that happen to be subject to the ownership of the state of Colorado, if I understood Mr. Feely's statement.
Thank you. Well, and if you pass number 89, right, it'll all qualify as Colorado, so it'll solve our problem there.
Well,
right?
I would quibble with that, Mr. Domenico, because I think the state's
kidding,
interest
Mr.
would be
Ramey,
as a trustee.
Just trying to enjoy myself here.
at my expense.
That's right.
We always
Luckily,
do this.
Luckily, the two of us can be recalled.
That's right.
There's hope.
Soon. All right. Well, I'm inclined to believe we still have a single subject here. I understand the arguments, but I don't think that they rise to the level of separate subjects. And so unless anybody has other comments, I'll go ahead and move that we deny the motion for rehearing on a single subject issue.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Let's move on to the title.
I have some suggested language.
Okay, yeah. Wonderful.
Thank you, members of the title board. Yeah, I will note or perhaps revisit an issue I raised that the title draft omits the limited reach of the initiative that caused the initiative use to use the possessive Colorados, and it should be amended to reflect that limitation. I think that it's important that the voter not be required to read the initiative as a whole or the title as a whole, but in fact the use of the specific language must be given its plain meaning, and words mean something, and the use of a possessive means something. And therefore I would ask that language to reflect that specific use of the possessive and the limited nature be incorporated into the title. The title fails to explain to voters that the initiative overrides current statewide rules that prohibit the location of oil and gas wells within certain distances of buildings and occupied buildings. Instead, the title improperly implies the initiative is creating, is establishing something new and filling a void as to something that is not already there. I think the initiative should reflect the fact that this is recognizing exactly that. Section 6. There are some use of the word, some words which we believe constitute catchphrases. The use of the phrase statewide setback has an alliterative quality that makes its true plain language meaning and should be replaced with the more common word prohibition, because that's what we're talking about here. We're not necessarily talking about a setback, and you'll see from the initiatives that are following this one that this is really a prohibition on oil and gas operations or oil and gas development within a certain period of time. This is a prohibition. I think it's a more accurate description of what's taking place should this initiative be enacted into law. The term new is vague and undefined and should be replaced or at least qualified with a more specific language of initiative concerning its application to wells that need a state or local permit. The title doesn't currently reflect that. And I would suggest that the use of hydraulic fracturing is politically charged, and its inclusion is likely to appeal to voter emotion without contributing to the public understanding of the relationship between the initiative and the technology. I realize it can get worse. We don't have the word fracking in here, but certainly hydraulic fracturing has become a very hot political issue here that generates emotion in the voter one way or the other, and should be avoided in trying to advise the voter of exactly what is in the initiative. It's a catchphrase that's pejorative. And with those, I made some suggestions that have passed out to the board, which addresses those specific recommendations for making an initiative that we think is clearer and more accurate description of the initiative that's proposed. If I can answer any questions?
I think one that might be relevant. Sorry, I lost it for a second. On the new oil and gas wells in the permit, are there any new ones that don't require permits?
I don't know the answer to that. I think that they all require permitting, and therefore the term new, I think it's just a more accurate explanation of what's contained in the initiative with the reference to the language that's in the initiative itself that is more helpful to the voters' understanding.
Well, I think new is in there to simply say if you've already got your oil and gas well, you don't have to move it if it's within the new setback requirements. So I think it certainly serves a purpose. We're not requiring all wells. We're not requiring existing wells to be moved, just new ones, and apparently all of them, if there are no new ones that don't require permits to meet these requirements.
I think it's 6 1/2 does of another. I mean, it's only prospective in nature anyway. The term new is probably not as descriptive as to what is the language that the proponents could set forth in the initiative itself.
Okay. At any rate, just responding briefly to your general points, first I'd say that I don't know that alliteration is a catchphrase makes, so I don't find that argument compelling. I think people know what new means, and it's in this context differentiation from existing, and
is probably pretty necessary. I am inclined to agree with you that I don't think hydraulic fracturing is, well, not as bad as fracking is necessary or helpful in this title. I lost that argument last time, and we'll see if it goes better this time. And I think I'll let others comment on whether we think, I am inclined to think that it does matter that there are some existing setback regulations that we probably should think hard about referencing in some way.
Thank you. Anything further?
Madam Chair?
Yeah. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I don't know if you want to hear from the proponents.
Go ahead.
Edward Ramey, Madam Chair. Most of what Mr. Gallander just said a few moments ago, I'm going to agree with, so I don't, I'm not going to just reiterate all of that in terms of the catchphrases and so forth. I guess I will say two things. I don't want to take apart, at this point, Mr. Feely's suggested title changes, except for two things. I really don't think it's necessary to have a comparative in there of the setback that this creates, that this new measure creates, and whatever the existing is, whatever the existing may be. And actually, that might change between now and Election Day for all the dickens we know. So, I think that would be both unnecessary and I mean, sort of this comparative thing that I'm not sure is appropriate in a title. We are creating a specific setback. Here's what it is, period. So I would argue against Mr. Gallander on that. On the hydraulic fracturing, let me just rejoin that issue again. We all agree, I think we fought the board at one point, maybe just tongue-in-cheek from Mr. Domenico, I don't know, should we put fracking in there or not? We certainly didn't want it. I mean, that's a catchphrase with bells and whistles on it. Hydraulic fracturing, I don't think is. As a proponent, we're certainly willing to take the risk, and heaven knows we're going to get a Supreme Court challenge, so, I mean, that will be addressed. I don't know what else to call it that makes sense to the people, and I think it's important to tell the voters that a primary impact of this thing is on that particular kind of operation. I don't want to hide that, and it's just oil and gas operations, and have people thinking that it doesn't involve the sort of the most preeminent kind of oil and gas operation that's in the news today, and that's what this is directed at. Of course, it is. So I think it's important that we alert the voters to that and not hide it from them. I will concede with Mr. Feely that, I won't concede anything, but I'm comfortable, I am absolutely comfortable that we will see that challenged if it remains in the title, and I think it should, because I think it's informative. But it will be addressed in a challenge to the Supreme Court, and we'll get an answer. But as the proponents who bear the risk of that, we're willing to assume that risk.
Sure, go ahead.
Sure. I think Mr. Ramey's description of the inclusion of the words hydraulic fracturing actually makes the point. It is a hot button issue. That's why it's there. If you look at the initiative itself, this deals with oil and gas wells requiring a state regulation of oil and gas wells requiring a state or local permit, and then, comma, including hydraulic fracturing. They've called this particular aspect of drilling out, and it's far more than that, and it's been done so because it is. It's not fracking, but it's the next step from fracking, and clearly with the public discussion that's been going on for quite some time now, and movies made, and blogs, and all that, it's become a catchphrase. We think that it is singling out one aspect of drilling that is dealt with in this bill, and which is really the intent behind the initiative as well.
Well, I can just say I was inclined, I think, almost entirely to agree with Mr. Gallander's statements, both with what he was inclined to reject in the proposed changes from that Mr. Feely provided, what he was willing to consider, which My understanding included basically two aspects of it. One, this line about hydraulic fracturing, and two, whether we need to signal that this is a change, not a completely new concept. Those two things, I agree, are worth discussing. And maybe the rest, I thought I was inclined to leave alone. So maybe we can start there. Is there anything else we should discuss besides making those two potential changes?
I don't think we need to make the changes about, I mean, I don't have a problem saying we're changing the current one, but I don't, generally we don't put what the old law was when we write these, so I'm not really inclined to do that. No, I'm fine debating the hydraulic fracturing issue again, because I just can't get enough of it.
I think maybe want to get Mr. Feely, or I guess no, Mr. Ramey to, I think he basically made this point, but I think Mr. Feely has an argument about Colorado's in the measure. I'm sort of inclined to think that at best that's ambiguous, and the proponents have told us they don't mean to limit it to government-owned mineral rights. And if that is one issue where I'm willing to sort of go with whatever the proponents, if they're willing to take that risk, that's consistent with my reading of it too. And so I'm willing to kind of not accept that, as long as the proponents are willing to recognize, you know, if somebody disagrees with our reading of that, they're running a bit of a risk there, I guess.
Mr. Domenico, Ed Ramey, on behalf of the proponents, we're willing to take that risk in response to your question, and while I'm up here, that had to happen. The point is we're not regulating oil and gas drilling in Nebraska. I mean, I'll stop and, with that.
And while you're up here, since, as you said, tell me why, as a voter, I shouldn't want to know that we're now having a uniform statewide setback that applies in all situations, that overrides what a government agency, presumably with some expertise and charge in regulating this area, overriding their setbacks, which, as I understand it, are variable depending on if you're in a rural area, an urban area, what type of structures you're dealing with. I mean, as a voter, don't I want to know that?
With all that language you just
said? No, not with all that language, but okay. In general, that there's something at notice. What I'd put it is notice that there is something existing out there that if you go down and read the blue book, you can find out a little more about what it is.
You know, we would not object to that, Mr. Callender. I think that the threat of what Mr. Feely was trying to say, and I think what you're trying to say, is this is a change. It's not just a new setback that we're establishing. This does change the current landscape, and I would agree with Madam Chair's statement as well that we don't need to recite what all the various and sundry setbacks are, but to say it's a change is fine. I would not quibble with you at all on that point. And my third point, while I'm still up here, the calling out of hydraulic fracturing. It's interesting that that's got such a tension between Mr. Feely and me, which sort of makes the point. I would say this, the language of the measure itself, forget about the title for a moment, the language of the measure calls out hydraulic fracturing. It says oil and gas operations, including hydraulic fracturing. That's important to the language of the measure. It was important enough to the proponents to have it in that language. And to somehow catchphrase issues aside, emotion aside, other words that we could use aside, not to inform the public what this is about, you know, I think sort of trumps the catchphrase concern up to a point. I mean, it doesn't authorize putting catchphrases in, but unless we're real sure that this is an outrageous catchphrase, we should inform the public what it's about, and yeah, it may influence their vote. I mean, that's an informed public. So I would advocate leaving hydraulic fracturing in. I would go with Madam Chair's statement about, and Mr. Gallander, yours as well, about pointing out that this is a change. That's totally appropriate. And I'm not at all worried about Colorado's. We'll certainly take the risk on that. The point is we're not affecting Nebraska or Kansas or purporting to.
Well, I don't know. What if you're just over the border of Nebraska, but within 50? No, I'm just kidding.
Well, I don't think. No, I have an answer to that, but I don't think you want me to go there.
No. But even if you hadn't said including hydraulic fracturing, that would be true anyway, wouldn't it? I mean, it is, right? Even if the measure had just stopped and said oil and gas, that would have...
As it would be true with countless other
right. He could have called it fracking. He could have called it anything. And, I mean, I guess if it fits the definition of what
but
he's...
I think the point is because of the perspective we have on the term hydraulic fracturing, that's exactly why it was put in the initiative. I mean, it could have been a laundry list of different drilling techniques that are affected by this initiative, including, timing and hours and, types of drilling materials and all kinds of different things. But what was done was said, we're dealing with oil and gas operations, including hydraulic fracturing. And that's specifically done to draw attention to it. That is by definition a catchphrase. And it's done so without educating the voter as to the totality of the initiative and the effect on all kinds of different aspects of drilling. And while I'm here, So I do think it's important to remove that catchphrase because it's not helpful for understanding the total. But while I'm here, in terms of changing, what are we changing? We are changing the current prohibition. So I appreciate the concession by Mr. Ramey with regard to or the acknowledgement that the proponents would be willing to accept the fact that this constitutes a change. But I think it's important to say exactly what's being changed as well. And what's being changed is the current prohibition within certain distances of certain occupied structures and other buildings.
All right. So why don't I start by saying I think I've changed my mind about the hydraulic fracturing language and come around to Mr. Gellander's position. It seems to me to be, if not a catchphrase, at least potentially misleading and certainly not truly material in the sense that, as the chair just pointed out, the measure does the same thing whether that's in there or not. The reason I find it potentially misleading is, as Mr. Ramey and Mr. Feely have both pointed out, this is what's in people's minds. This is an important thing that's going on. It's a discussion that's already taking place. Seeing that in there might suggest that the setback we're talking about relates to those. And somebody might say, well, yes, for wells that use hydraulic fracturing, we should have this new statewide 1,500-foot setback. But I'm inclined to think maybe others should have different limits. And I'm a little concerned that would be misleading. And since I don't think it's material in the sense that I don't think it changes the actual effect of the measure, I'm inclined to let the public debate raise the fact that this involves hydraulic fracturing rather than our title.
Okay. So with that, Steve, I think you can probably pull that now. So the second issue then is just the acknowledging sort of that there are existing setback rules. And I think what I would do, and I don't love the positioning of it, but for flow purposes, I think it makes sense, is right after therewith, just adding in the phrase, overriding existing setback requirements, which also covers the fact that the existing ones are apparently non-waivable, if not as clearly as Mr. Feely would like, at least it accounts for that, and that can be an argument for the Blue Book process. And then just put an and right after that.
then with that, I think I'm pretty comfortable with the title.
So the other way I was thinking of dealing with that was just saying concerning a change to the statewide setback requirement up on line one, and then not including the... To me, that's probably enough, and we wouldn't need to restate it again later, but I don't know.
I think I'm going to... I don't object to that. I think my way goes with your usual practice of keeping the single subject simpler and doing the description in the trailer, but I'm fine either way.
Yeah, I'm probably fine either way. If we went with your previous suggestion, I might have switched around the order of those two clauses and left requiring as the initial thing after in connection therewith, and then saying putting the and overriding existing setback requirements after occupied structure.
All right.
So I can live with either getting rid of change to the or leaving it in.
I think I'd prefer it that way, just to keep the single subject a little shorter.
I'm fine with it.
Okay. So I guess you want to read it, what we have in there.
Can you collapse again? Hard time reading this time. Okay. An amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning a statewide setback requirement for new oil and gas wells and in connection therewith requiring any new oil and gas well to be located at least 1,500 feet from the nearest occupied structure and overriding existing setback requirements, authorizing a homeowner to waive the setback for the homeowner's home, and establishing that the statewide setback is not a taking of private property requiring compensation under the Colorado Constitution. You have a comment?
Madam Chair, yes, Edward Ramey on behalf of the proponents. All okay except the word overriding. I would meet Mr. Gallander and Mr. Domenico halfway and make that changing instead of overriding if possible. I think what it does is change it.
By eliminating the existing ones.
Yeah. I mean, but it's a change. That's what changes do. And I think change is a more neutral word. That's, of course, one thing I'm concerned with as well. Overriding seems to suggest that that an existing setback requirement is there and another one comes in sort of preempts it or something of that nature. What we're doing is changing.
Yeah, like what's happening, you mean?
Well, not, well, Mr. Feeler would certainly agree. Well, I would say, I would submit on behalf of proposed that changing the existing setback requirement is far more neutral and far less laden with sort of a power precept to it.
Yeah,
so we would request that I'd meet the two of you halfway. And
I would agree. I think that overriding can imply you're having to take out what's properly in the system and override it. So I don't...
Madam Chair,
it's like at the grocery store when they override your...
I would suggest that the current requirements are properly in the system. And this is the voters overriding the local and state decision makers who have addressed the issue before. I think it's an accurate description of exactly what's taking place.
But then it would be accurate every time
about
we did one of these.
Eviscerating.
Eviscerating.
I like that better. I like that better.
Obliterating.
Well, so, I mean, I'm obviously okay with overriding. If we're gonna go to changing, I think it would make sense to alter the grammar of that clause a little bit, and actually it would go back to something more similar to Mr. Gellinger's structure, and it would say something like, in connection therewith, changing existing setback requirements So any new oil and gas well, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
I don't, I defer, if both of you are for changing, then that's, you know, fine by me. I, as a proponent on a very different initiative used earlier this year, you know, I feel there's the phrase unfairly bland or maybe unnecessarily bland. You know, a lot of times we try so hard to be neutral that we're not informative. And I feel like overriding is more informative, but I'm not going to fight for it.
Well, there's lots of ways to write a satisfactory
title. Right, so let's pick one and
yes,
proceed.
Madam Chair,
I'm sorry.
Do you want to invoke your authority?
I don't have any if I'm 2-1.
And I hate this. There is just one slight thing. Can we just add the word requirement after setback on line 5? That kind of bugs me.
If we can change, no, I'm just kidding.
That's fine. And actually, I guess on line 6 too. Yeah. Okay. Should I move this as?
Sure, if no, you guys
it's
are,
going to be.
I mean, it's not going to get a no vote out of me or anything. I just
no,
don't
I'm not.
Like the word.
No, well, my I made a potential suggestion for changing it and
obliterating.
No, not obliterating or decimating. No, it was to sort of say changing the existing setback requirements to require any new oil and gas well to be located, blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
I'm happy with either one. I understand Mr. Gellender's point that overriding is a little more forceful, and I understand Mr. Ramey's point that overriding is a little more forceful, and that they have different perspectives on whether that's good or bad.
I mean, I just think if we have a choice between using a word that's neutral, I prefer to use the...
All right, I'll defer to that. That's fine. Then you wanted it moved up then?
Well, the only way I could think of that didn't get kind of goofy, I find that sort of strange, would be to say changing at the beginning of, before requiring, changing existing setback requirements to require.
You want to collapse it again, and we'll read it again? Okay, so this is an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning a statewide setback requirement for new oil and gas wells and in connection therewith changing existing setback requirements to require any new oil and gas well to be located at least 1,500 feet from the nearest occupied structure, authorizing a homeowner to waive the setback requirement for the homeowner's home and establishing that the statewide setback requirement is not a taking of private property requiring compensation under the Colorado Constitution.
Can I just say one tiny thing, and I apologize for this, but we say new oil and gas wells in the single subject, but then we say any new oil and gas well. Shouldn't it be in the second reference? Even it's and before to say it's both categories, but to say oil or gas well.
Right.
All right.
Okay.
And with that, I would move that we... let's see, grant the motion for rehearing to the extent that we modify the title and adopt the title as it appears on the screen for proposed initiative 2013-14, number 85.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. That takes us to motion for rehearing on proposed initiative 2013-2014, number 86. And Mr. Feely.
Well, let me adopt, first of all, by reference my earlier arguments with regard to 85 and just take a couple of moments on a couple of additional subjects. I really want to point out, from the jurisdictional perspective, I guess, Section 3 of Initiative 86, I think that that is particularly misleading. As counsel for the proponent noted at the previous hearing, nothing in the measure would affect federal rights of any party to seek just compensation or pursue a takings claim under federal law. And without a law degree or a deep understanding of the relationship between federal and state constitutional law, the reference in the title to, quote, not a taking of private property requiring compensation of the Colorado Constitution, close quote, without reference to the continuing rights requiring compensation under the United States Constitution is a critical omission, and I think is really does not advise the average voter of what the implications are. It is an omission, a significant omission in 86, 87, 88, and I would suggest in 85, even though I may have overlooked that. A second point, and I'll address all my issues because these are remarkably similar, and that's exactly my second point. I think Mr. Domenico earlier this morning, I wasn't here, but I've heard dealt with questions about similar language and initiatives and what the responsibility of the title board is at this point in time with regard to that. At the initial hearing, the proponents' council described initiatives 85 through 88 as a packet of initiatives with the same subject and gave assurances that the proponents will only be going forward with one. But the case law construing Colorado Revised Statutes 140-106-3B, they construe that statute to mean that an impermissible conflict in titles exists where the titles fail to accurately reflect the distinctions between the measures, and voters comparing the titles would not be able to distinguish between the two proposed measures. When they say they're moving forward, only going forward with one, what does that mean? They're going forward with eight as of today, and this is the last board meeting, except for cleanup matters. These are all very similar. The public is not aware, and I think this raises a new subject in light of the adoption of 85, and I think the board needs to address it. I think there's too many of these that sound that are not just similar but identical, and an assurance that only one will be going forward is irrelevant. I think the board needs to address 86, and I'll anticipate it with 87 and 88, and the case law construing the statute.
I'd like to address that particular point, and I'll certainly defer to our counsel if he disagrees with me. I've not spoken about this before, but as I read this statute, it talks about a conflict between a previously filed petition, and these aren't petitions yet at this stage. It becomes a petition later, so I don't think we're required to follow the statute at this point. I think what our past practice has been is to avoid setting similar titles when we have different proponents in the danger of just that, you know, to prevent the situation where opponents of one measure deliberately try to get a similar title for something else to create voter confusion. In this case, I think what we do, if I'm interpreting the law correctly, is trust the incentives in the situation, which is that proponents have, when it's the same proponents for these, they have no incentive to go forward with more than one and cause confusion themselves, go to additional expense, and so forth, and figure that will, especially when they've gone the record as saying they're only going to go through with one, that should solve the problem.
Yeah, that was my understanding.
It's the latter interpretation that we've always taken. The idea was that you wanted to prevent measures that looked similar and confused the voters proposed by two different sets of proponents. But when you in the past, we've always had the situation where the same proponents may have adopted similar measures with slight tweaks, and we've always accepted the promise that they would only submit one. And the view of the board has been that that is sufficient to avoid any potential confusion to the petitioner, excuse me, to the voters or the signers.
Yeah. Well, I agree with that. I'm less concerned about these 85 through really 88 or all the way through 93 causing that kind of problem, partly because of the reasons stated, partly because I don't think they conflict. I think they do. get across the material differences between them where there are material differences. My concern at least was at least as much with some of the other measures that we've set titles for with different proponents that have similar and that we might set later that have somewhat similar impacts. I'm not sure that affects this so much as some of the local government ones and some of those other things. But, I mean, to me, we've complied with the statute even if it applies by saying, you know, this one's 2000. Even if both of these were on the ballot, I don't think they'd be confusing. Annoying, perhaps, but not confusing.
Okay. So I guess my first suggestion would be to essentially conform this title to what we did on 85, so far as they're similar.
Well, should we have we had a motion on the jurisdictional aspects of it first?
Oh.
Should we?
Yeah, sorry.
We haven't.
Good point. That's all right. I just want. So then I'll move that we deny the motion for rehearing on any jurisdictional arguments, including single subject, incorporating all the comments made previously.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Right.
We are still on homeowner here, right?
Yes.
2000. Okay. Do we need to read it in again, or should I just move it?
I'll read it in again. An amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning a statewide setback requirement for new oil and gas wells and in connection therewith changing existing setback requirements to require any new oil or gas well to be located at least 2,000 feet from the nearest occupied structure, authorizing a homeowner to waive the setback requirement for the homeowner's home and establishing that the statewide setback requirement is not a taking of private property requiring compensation under the Colorado Constitution.
All right. Madam Chair, about 10 words. Mr. Feely incorporated his comments, I think, with regard to this one, as made with regard to the previous initiative, number 85. We would do the same. That discussion's been had. We don't have to have it again. And I think we'll both do the same probably for 87 and 88 as well. We'll do it all again. Okay.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
In that case, I would move that we grant the motion for rehearing to the extent that we adopt modified the title, and that we adopt the title as it appears on the screen for proposed initiative 2013-14, number 86.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
It's a little bit.
Are you having new arguments?
No, man. Okay. I have a lot of fun.
All right, that takes us to motion for rehearing on proposed initiative 2013-2014, number 87.
Madam Chair, we would incorporate by reference our comments and arguments with regard to our two previous discussions regarding 85 and 86.
Madam Chair, Edward Ramey on behalf of the proponents. That was Mike Feely, by the way, speaking a moment ago. We would also incorporate our comments for 85 and 86 with regard to 87 on behalf of the proponents. Okay.
Do you want to do single subject?
Sure. Then I will move that we, likewise incorporating our previous discussion on 85 and 86, deny the motion for rehearing on any jurisdictional grounds, including single subject.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. Right. As it reads now, it's an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning a statewide setback requirement for new oil and gas wells, and in connection therewith, changing existing setback requirements to require any new oil or gas well to be located at least 1/2 mile from the nearest occupied structure, authorizing a homeowner to waive the setback requirement for the homeowner's home, and establishing that the statewide setback requirement is not a taking of private property requiring compensation under the Colorado Constitution.
All right, then I would move we grant the motion for rehearing to the extent that we've amended the title for and adopt the title as appears on the screen for proposed initiative 2013-14, number 87.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Madam Chair, excuse me, could we get the title on the big screen also?
Oh.
Thank you.
Well, I want to just note a couple of differences.
Yeah. I've never understood the picture taking. Why do you take the pictures?
I don't even have a camera. I don't know.
Just because they don't want to wait for us to release the results.
Which is like later tonight?
Usually, yeah. Sometimes it takes 24 hours.
Okay. It is about the saddest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah. I've never understood it.
I had assumed that that is because the titles are works of towering and surpassing genius that should be recorded for
like
all
taking
posterity.
A picture of the Mona Lisa.
Or we put it in a museum somewhere.
Okay. Anyway. All right. So the next item on the agenda is a motion for rehearing on proposed initiative 2013-2014, number 88.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the title board, Mike Feely on behalf of the objectors. There are a couple of subtle distinctions with respect to Initiative 88. It's very similar to 86 in terms of the 2,000-foot prohibition. It also refers to oil and gas operations rather than oil and gas development. And also there is the omission of the language regarding takings. I think that'll be significant down the road, but it's... Finally, there's another change with regard to the waiver. In this effect, this says that the waiver can, let me make sure I get that right, it affects the surface estate owner, not the homeowner. I think those distinctions, let me incorporate by reference the comments and the arguments that we made with respect to the three previous initiatives. I think that the distinctions in 88 sort of speak for themselves, and we've probably covered that ground right now. So I'll just note in passing the distinctions. I think it is they're significant for reasons that the title board has already addressed in previous initiatives.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Madam?
Yes, I think so.
Madam Chair, Edward Ramey on behalf of the proponents. We incorporate our prior comments as well with regard to the other initiatives. Two things. Number one, the difference between homeowner and the language, that's where we came up with property owner, which is reflected in the title of this measure. And as the title is presently construed that or presently formulated, the takings provision is not present. So we addressed that last time. So I'm envisioning that subject to all the reservations everybody's made that you will do a change similar to the one you just did, but making sure that the takings phrase is out of there and that property owner as opposed to homeowner is duly reflected.
Right.
And maybe we'll start with the basics. Steve, I think we should conform the language. So whatever's, you know, after in connection therewith, we had the changing from the other ones.
Let me go ahead and move on the jurisdictional questions, right? So I move that we deny the motion for a hearing, again, incorporating the comments that have been made on the measures 85 through 87 that are relevant, deny it as to jurisdictional issues, including single subject.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
You want to do or in place of and on line 9, the first and. Which line is that? Line 9. For gas well. And then requirement after setback on line 10. Looks good.
So I have a vague recollection that we discussed property owner versus landowner and such, but I'm reading it, landowner seems better to me, but I think we discussed it and changed our mind about that, but I don't recall why.
We did, and I don't remember why.
I guess my point is property, of course, as everyone who went to law school understands, is a bundle of sticks that includes not only the surface estate, but various other things, and this is pretty clear that it's not just any property owner, it's only the surface owner. Landowner strikes me as getting at that more clearly without raising potential problems that I at least can understand.
I'm fine with it. But it doesn't apply to the boat.
Or the person who owns the subsurface property rights, more importantly.
You want landowner to be one word or two?
I don't know.
Well, let's see, what's the initiative say? Oh, it doesn't.
It doesn't.
Do you want me to Google
it? I would probably make it one word. Is my inclination.
Okay.
Spell check says it's okay, so it must be okay.
It's be fine then.
You want to read it in?
What?
Do you want to read it in or we?
Oh yeah. This is an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning a statewide setback requirement for new oil and gas wells and in connection therewith, changing existing setback requirements to require any new oil or gas well to be located at least 2,000 feet from the nearest occupied structure, and authorizing a landowner to waive the setback requirement for any structure located on the owner's property.
All right. I would move that we grant the motion for rehearing to the extent that we've amended the title and adopt the title for as it appears on the screen for proposed initiative 2013-14, number 88.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. I think we're going to take a five-minute break, and then we will start the next batch of rehearings, starting with number 90.